Okay. Very good morning.
Good morning.
We are going to, Be'ezus Hashem, do the prep for this Shabbos Gai Shir by Rabbi Reingold. And it's meant to be Bais Medrash style, so feel free to chime in. And we will hopefully see the road condition when we're done. And if they're running the Shir, we can run over there. So let's go through the questions that Rabbi Reingold prepared. Why is Amira La'akum Asur? Does anybody have information that you know offhand before we see the Mar Mekaymus? Just quickly, why is Amira La'akum Asur?
If it's Asur for you, you can ask someone else to do it.
If it's Asur for you to do, then you can't ask somebody else to do it either. We'll have to see if we can find that in one of the Rishonim. Okay? Number two, is Amira required to be Asur? That means, do I have to say something to the guy for it to be Asur, or can I just, you know, make with the light bulbs and with the switches with my hands and remiza and all kinds of other methods? And by the way, does it matter if I tell him to do it on Shabbos? Does it matter if I tell him to do it before Shabbos? You have shuls, used to be, they used to tell the guy beforehand, okay, so at 9 o'clock, make sure those lights are on, at 10 o'clock, make sure these lights are on, then shut those lights and go there. Are you allowed to do that whole itinerary before Shabbos? Number four, Tesis introduces an Isser Hanah from actions of the non-Jew, even if he wasn't asked. This is very powerful. People don't get this. A lot of people think that as long as I hinted, I'm okay. It's not true. Even if you didn't do anything, and he did it on his own, it would still be Asur because he did it for you.
Yeah, for you, right? If he did it for himself, it's...
What happens if he did it for himself?
Like he's cold.
He's cold. You have a non-Jewish worker in your house for some reason, helping out with an ill patient, a waiter because you're running a Sheva Brachas or something, and they walk into the basement and they want the light on, so they flip the light on so that it's easier for them to find what they want. Right? They ask you for a bottle of beer. You say, I only have beer in the basement. If you were not for us, for you. They flip the light on. They go down, find the beer, take their lunch break, whatever it is. And now on the way up, they're going to turn off the light, or are they? They're turning it off? Well, it was turned on for them. Do you want that light on? Do you want that light off? Does it make a difference? I once had a nurse taking care of my grandmother walked into our bedroom. She turned on the light to find some whatever, books, linen, whatever she wanted. And then on her way out, we're already in pajamas, she says, should I shut the light?
Oh, man.
I mean, like, you know, genius, you put it on. What do you want from me? I mean,
right. I mean, we would prefer if it was dark in the room. Right?
We are trying to go to sleep. Yeah.
In the case of the basement, that's a mirror, as Alosa say, like, don't touch the light.
Good. Good. All of this has to be taken into account. Right. We're right. It's important to outline these questions. I think I was a child at the time. I think I mumbled something like, I think it would be nice if you left the room the way you found it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number six, does a non-Jew's intention play a role? Of course it does. If he's doing it for himself, right? We have a principle, ner le'echad, ner le'meya. You light a lamp and it counts for everybody. And he didn't light any more because it's more people, it's Jews. Didn't make a difference. Is it an Isser midoraisa or midrabanon? We're supposed to see that on page 9. 8. Does the Isser apply to halachas other than Shabbos, Yom Tov, and Chol HaMoed? Is there across the board a prohibition to have a non-Jew do something that you're not allowed to do? This comes up very interestingly by, I don't know if the correct word is castrate by animals, but making an animal
Neutering.
Neutering, thank you. A little better to be a pet. You don't want to have issues with it. So you're not allowed to do such a thing. Right. So what would happen if you asked a... Right, so you're not allowed to do it to people. You're not allowed to do it to animals unless there's a serious health concern that outweighs the prohibition. But otherwise, you're not allowed to do it. Are you allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it? That's a shlichus, something, right? Okay, let's begin. So on page one, we begin with one of the most interesting ways to start a sugya is always to be overly sophisticated. So instead of starting with the prohibition, we're starting with a leniency, but you have to have appreciated what the prohibition was. Take a look at the Mishnah towards the bottom of the page. A person finds that it's getting dark while he's traveling Friday late afternoon, and he's got to dispose of the things that he's carrying, both because of carrying and muktzah, whatever. Nosen kisa lenachri. He's allowed to give his wallet to the non-Jew to carry it for him, even though that's theoretically amira la'akum. You're asking a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. You're asking before Shabbos, but he's going to do work for you on Shabbos. You're allowed to do that. There's a special dispensation over here because we're worried that if we don't give you an allowance to do it, we're worried you're going to do it yourself because Adam Omed Al Mamono, a person doesn't want to lose his money. If there's no non-Jew with him, Manicho Al HaChamor, he should put it on the donkey and let the donkey carry it. However, that worked around our problem. When you get to a closed area, so the stuff that you're allowed to touch on Shabbos, move it on Shabbos, that you're going to take off. And the things that you're not allowed on Shabbos, you just undo the knots. Not knots, but the ropes. It wouldn't be in a knot form because then you wouldn't be allowed to do it on Shabbos. But release the ropes is correct translation. And the sacks will fall on their own. The key part that was marked over here is Rashi on the bottom. Three lines up from the bottom in Rashi, where the Gemara says, "Maitaima desharu le rabbanon the mesef kisei lenachri." How could the rabbanon allow you? Where does this psak come from that you're allowed to give your wallet to the non-Jew traveling with you to carry for you? And the Gemara answered, "Kim luhu le rabbanon." Which is what I said. We're worried that the person is not going to observe because his money is at stake. So we have to give him a solution. So Rashi says, what was the problem? You just made him a shliach to carry it for you on Shabbos. And that's the concept of shlichus, which I believe is the way we would halachically phrase what Martin was referring to. How can you ask somebody else to do something that you yourself are not allowed to do?
Although you made him a shliach before Shabbos.
That's very interesting. You did. You made him a shliach before Shabbos, but he's going to do the shlichus on your behalf on Shabbos.
I mean that he wouldn't be able to do it on Shabbos. Right? He would not be able to designate him.
So we're going to see in a moment, there's an additional problem of designating him on Shabbos, which is v'daber dover, your verbalizing something that you're not supposed to be talking about on Shabbos. Imagine you would tell him straight out, please carry this wallet for me with an akira, a transfer, and a hanocha on Shabbos. Right? I mean, let's, you know, do this lemahadrin. What's the problem? You made him a shliach to do what's forbidden. That would be a problem if you did it on Shabbos, besides the shlichus issue, because of v'daber dover, because you said it out. What's accomplished whenever we do remiza is to a certain extent the same thing that's accomplished when you do it before Shabbos. I'm not speaking on Shabbos. I mean, there are differences, but that's... You have an additional problem if you're saying it on Shabbos. Let's move on to 2. Page 2. Uvuchol makom, I'm in the Gemara about 6 lines down. Everywhere, a mochrim behima gasa, you're not allowed to sell certain types of animals to a non-Jew. My taima, what's the problem? Nehi de l'revia lo chashin, and we're not worried about immoral behavior. But mavid be malocha chayshinon. We're worried that they're going to be doing malocha with the animal. What's the problem? Kevin de Zavna Kanya. Once you sold it, he owns it. Gezeira Mishem She'ela. We're worried that you're going to loan it to him, and then it's really yours, and he's doing labor with yours on Shabbos. Elo Amar Rami Bar Derebi Rav Yeva. One line later. Gezeira Mishum Nisyuni. The real problem is we're worried that you're going to be selling the animal to him Erev Shabbos, and the animal is not going to go, and you're going to make it go in order to prove that it does what it's supposed to do to consummate the deal. The animal is still yours, and because you used your voice, you caused it to go. And that is the malacha of mechamer. Mechamer achar behemto, getting your animal to go on Shabbos. V'amechamer achar behemto b'Shabbos chayiv chatos. And if a person causes his animal to go on Shabbos, that's a violation. Okay.
Is this the rice?
It's not a lamites malachas. It's one of those interesting things that is brought in the Gemara that's not one of the lamites malachas, and it's a question of exactly what level of prohibition it is.
That's why it's chayiv chatos.
That's the wording in our Gemara. Our Gemara says chayiv chatos. I believe in a different source you'll find that it's a lav.
Okay.
But either way, it makes sense why they made a gezeira, because it is an iser Shabbos. Mm-hmm.
But the voice, when you're telling the animal, so to speak, to move, that's to do work.
Giddy up.
Though. That's to do work, right?
I don't believe there's any requirement for the prohibition to do work. It's getting it to go.
So I'm just like, if you have a pet and you say, come here, and is that the same thing?
Mechamer achar behemto, getting your animal to go.
Like, so I would assume it's like work of malach, something, right? It would be an issue, but just to come over here,
I could jump into this, but I never researched it, so I'd rather not jump into it.
It's a says like it's a cow or a bull.
My reaction is that this is not talking
animals,
about playing frisbee with the dog, and you toss it and you go fetch. I don't know. But you need a little source material to know where to go with that.
Okay. It's the first time I heard that, so that's why I don't know what the boundary is.
Okay. So I don't know if this is... It must be just marked in mine when
I looked this over.
All Rabbeinu did was make a little comma. Okay, so I'm going to tell you to go where I marked.
With the fourth, I see over
which
here.
Which is...
Oh, sorry.
Go down on the right-hand margin, right after the Hagos Habach. There's that fancy design. And then jump into Rashi. Kevan Dezovna Kanye. Okay? So at that point in the Gemara says, I don't understand what your problem is. If he sold the animal, Erev Shabbos, so it's sold. It's not his.
Right.
Zokt Rashi. Kevan Dezovna Kanye ve'eno shel Yisrael. It's not the Jews, says Rashi. Umishum lifnei iver lo sitein michshol lo ka'avar. And if you're worried about lifnei iver, lo sitein michshal, that I'm giving an animal to a non-Jew, and he's going to do malacha with it, that's not a problem. Debnei noach lo nitzdavu ala shavisa, because non-Jews are not obligated to keep Shabbos. So there's no problem that he's going to do malacha on Shabbos with the animal. Only problem is that you might do malacha with the animal on Shabbos, and it's not your animal anymore. Avol gabe revia, but you noticed, Rashi points out, that earlier in the Gemara, when we mentioned the possibility of immoral behavior with the animal, and we said, okay, lo chashin, we're not worried that he's going to do that. He could damage his animal. We're not worried that he's going to do that. Leka lemeimar hacha, you couldn't answer over there, no, there's no lifnei iver. Mishim dehasa ka'over lifnei iver lo zitei michsha. Because if it was true that the non-Jew would behave immorally with the animal, then you did set him up for lifnei iver lo zitei michsha problem. Lifi shebnei noach nitztavo al ha-revia. Because non-Jews are prohibited in immoral activity with an animal.
That's the Shiva Mitzvah B'nai Noach?
Yes.
Really?
That's part of Shiva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, to be with an animal.
V'dovak
be'ishto, to stick to his wife, and not to all other inventive variations thereof.
Right, okay.
Rabbi, an earlier point you said because it's not your animal, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to get the animal to do work. But if it's your animal, it's still also for you to do malacha with the animal. I mean, to work with the animal. Isn't that true? Or? If it's your animal,
real malacha is straightforward aseres hadibros. Right? You're not allowed to do malacha with your animal.
So
this is an item that most people are not aware of. There's a halacha of mechamer, which you see here in the Gemara.
Okay.
That even if you get the animal to go using your voice, and we have to know the parameters, but it's not really our topic. That's also a restriction.
Oh, okay.
Aval Shabbos, Rashi continues, lo nistavu b'nei noach. Regarding Shabbos, non-Jews do not have such a commandment, and this is what he marked. I know you're going to ask me a question now that I built this all up and you understand the Gemara, what the issues here are. You're going to ask me a question. So why is Amira La'akum prohibited? He doesn't have a mitzvah of Shavisa. So why can't I ask him to turn on the light on Shabbos? Why can't I ask him to drive and obtain the fancy china that I forgot to bring for the Sheva Brachas? What's the problem? He has no mitzvah of Shabbos. Zehu mishum mimitzo chefzecha v'daber davar. That's because there's a pasuk in Navi that says you have to refrain from your weekday endeavors and the way you speak during the week. So the way you speak during the week means speech of malacha. So to ask him to do it for you, Rashi says, is not a problem from him. It's a problem from what you ended up having to say. And of course, you can pounce on this, Rashi, and say, oh, okay, so what happens if I tell him before Shabbos? Or what happens if I tell him Beremiza? Or what happens if I don't tell him at all and he just does it because he's smart? And he knows what I need. But that's what Rashi phrases it as.
So
it's a problem of a daber dover.
It's not a problem of shlichus per se.
Beautiful.
You shouldn't be talking about this.
Rashi doesn't invoke shlichus. Rashi's reason is very weak in addressing certain types of cases, right? I just listed off cases where v'daber davar really doesn't hold the day.
Is it possible that just two different cases and shlichus wouldn't apply here because he's talking to the animal, right? So, yeah, in this case there's no shlichus. Mm. It's a different case, right? Shlichus is forbidden when it's a shlichus. There's no shlichus here. dibur is forbidden because he's talking to the animal. So that dibur, that's what matters here. So you can't use slichus here, right?
So let's think through. The problem was that I'm selling him an animal. If he does malacha, now that he owns the animal, it doesn't bother me. Because, Rashi says it twice, because non-Jews do not have a mitzvah of Shabbos.
It's not lifnei iver.
It's not lifnei iver. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a mitzvah of Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Good. So Rashi asks Akasha now. So then why is Amir La'akum prohibited? I don't understand. Why is Amir La'akum prohibited? You told me twice he doesn't have a mitzvah of Shabbos. Read my lips. He doesn't have a mitzvah of Shabbos. So then why is Amir La'akum prohibited? So Rashi says, V'daber dover.
So it's not really addressed in the dibur.
I'm not sure, right. I'm not sure that he's really addressing our Gemara. It's kind of, he branched off to a global question, an encyclopedic question. So why is there a sugya of Amira La'akum you're going to ask me? I'll tell you, V'daber dover. Okay. So, to be fair, because we're flipping all the different reasons back and forth, there are weaknesses to the reason of V'daber Davar, but there's also a very strong application why you need V'daber Davar, and that is if you were to tell the Akum to do Malacha after Shabbos. That's going to be prohibited. Shlichus is not going to make a difference because he's doing it after Shabbos. But V'daber Davar, you're asking him to do the Malacha, and you're asking him on Shabbos to do the Malacha.
Oh, on Shabbos, to do it after Shabbos.
Yeah. Okay. Take your car
and go
and drive to Rockville.
Pick up whatever.
After Shabbos and pick up, right? Which, by the way, gives us pause, because this is the Shiloh. Sometimes people talk like that to Jews on Shabbos.
Yeah, right.
I talked to you about what you're going to do, and that, hence the expression, nisht of Shabbos geret. We should not talk about this on Shabbos, but that's right. So you have to know exactly
in that case,
what...
even what I myself am going to do, doing a malach after Shabbos.
Right, v'daber dover. So for Amira La'akum so far, we have a Rashi that says shlichus, we have a Rashi that says v'daber dover. Let's move on to the Rambam on page 3. The start of the 6th perek in Shabbos. Osur lomar lenochri lasos lano malacha b'Shabbos. It's forbidden to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for us on Shabbos, even though a non-Jew is not obligated in the mitzvahs of Shabbos. It's like everybody needs to preface. That's Rashi also. He needs to preface that. And this prohibition is going to be true even if you asked him to do the malacha. You asked him before Shabbos to do it on Shabbos. And even if you don't need to benefit from the malacha until after Shabbos, the Rambam is really calculating all the different eventualities, because benefiting from the malacha on Shabbos is its own issues. V'dovers are also medivrei sofrim. It's a rabbinic prohibition. Kedei shelo tehe Shabbos kalo be'einehen. So that malacha of Shabbos should not be light in people's eyes, v'yavo lasos be'atzmon, and they'll come to do it themselves. Imagine if you had the non-Jew, I don't know, sewing for you, and you don't like the way he's sewing, and you reach over, and you just, like, you're just a little, no. Generally, they say that this was one of the big challenges regarding electricity, because the poskim observed that if you take electricity and robotics to their normal conclusion, your factory can be open on Shabbos, producing 24 hours, 7 days a week. And it's You're going to destroy Shabbos. And that's what they were worried about when it came to malacha of a non-Jew, that you're going to end up destroying Shabbos. And therefore, it's prohibited under normal circumstances to ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you. So we have three reasons right now. Again, they are... It's a din shlichus. He's an extension of me. Second thing is, if you said it on Shabbos,
Dibur.
And the Rambam says, I don't care before, after, during, it makes no difference. If you're getting somebody to do malacha for you on Shabbos, we're worried that Shabbos will deteriorate and we'll be in trouble.
This is all encompassing, including all those reasons before, right? The reason of Rambam, doesn't matter what the shlichus involved, what the dibur involved. Anyway, you get the goy do malacha for you, you're going to get, also involved in studying malacha. So
right.
It's like more broader reason than here.
The one thing that I think V'davar Davar still achieves is if you asked him to do malacha for after Shabbos. The Rambam's really doesn't... Rambam is if he's doing the malacha on Shabbos, even if I don't need it till after Shabbos, but he's doing it on Shabbos, V'davar Davar still has one edge over this.
Well, the Rambam, it sounds like it's a gzera, and it's mutter deraisa, and it's, I don't know what we say about shlichus.
Say it again? Why do you say deraisa?
It's mutter deraisa.
It's mutter.
Right, it's beger de mutter.
Yes.
It's a gzera, shema, so you shouldn't have a
and davar davar is also not, that's not the right, so right the hand, that's not
davar davar is divrei sofrim. It's a little bit stronger than a regular derabon.
Okay,
well, that is a pasuk from Navi.
It's a pasuk in Navi. Okay, question.
Somewhat of a philosophical question, maybe, if you don't feel it's appropriate. When
on a regular Sunday morning shiur, if I don't like your question, I'm allowed to, stretch in your direction. Today, it's base medrash style.
Free card,
whatever
huh?
you want.
Using my lifeline. So when the rabbis created their fences or protections for Shabbos, is it that they're concerned for the holiness of Shabbos? Are they concerned that we're going to do an avera, right? Or are they concerned that we're not going to keep Shabbos, right? What are they really like? Are they afraid that if we start to minimize the Shabbos, that we're going to take it too lightly and we're going to not keep Shabbos, or it's just the holiness thing, or they're just looking at straight, like they just really don't want to do an avera. They're trying to,
So let's look at the three reasons that were given. And let's apply David's question to them. We had a question of shlichus, we had a question of v'davar davar speech, uh-huh. and we had a question of the Rambam's description that if you right. have him do it, you're going to come to do it.
Right.
So let's start with the last one first, because it's the easiest to respond to your question. Uh-huh. Your question is, are we worried about the sanctity, or are we worried about a technical halachic violation? So the Rambam's very clear. We're worried that you're going to come to a technical halachic violation. Right? Let's move back. What about v'davar davar? So v'davar davar is what we would describe, if you wanted to talk philosophy language, it's an ethical thing. Because it says there that your way of walking should be different on Shabbos than it is during the week. And your way of speech should be different.
It's more of a sanctity thing.
It's a sanctity thing. And okay. V'davar davar would respond to your question as a sanctity thing. The other thing is the shlichus. Now, again, it's unusual in our normal way of learning to think of shlichus la'akum, that a non-Jew is our messenger, is our emissary to do something. But that's what's being described here, in which case this, if we take it the way it sounds like it's as if you did the technical violation. On some level, you did it. It's not just a sanctity issue. It's on some level you did the violation. Okay?
So, but the last thing you said confused me. So In terms of shlichus, why should it matter if it's a Jew or a non-Jew? If you having somebody do something for you, right?
Because there's arvus and all kinds of things only exist by a Jew. Typically, l'rabos shaluchachem, typically is referring to Jews. Person goes ahead and takes teruma on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's doing a mitzvah. I mean, I can understand, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if you send somebody to do something for you, you're a shaliach. I mean,
well,
I
guess, this is
we're all talking about mitzvahs.
It's a religious thing.
Yeah, we're talking about mitzvahs. Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying you can't be your lawyer to make a kinyan.
Right.
But, or I don't know, sign documents, proxy. Yeah.
Like deliver get or something. That would probably have to be a Jew because it's
the simple understanding, and you should just be aware that this is a little bit off the normal way. We don't normally refer to Akum as a shliach.
Right.
It's not normally the way we...
Right.
Just to be aware that it's a little bit...
Mm-hmm.
There's some twist that's going on here. Let's move on to page 4. Mishnah in Shabbos, very fundamental. About 10 lines from the top, Masnisin. Nochri shehidlik es haner, a non-Jew lit a candle. On Shabbos, Mishtamish Laora Yisrael, a Jew is allowed to benefit from that light. What is the expression? Anybody know the expression? Ner Le'echad, Ner Le'meya. Light makes no difference how many people are there. And once he lit it, multiple people can benefit
that's
from it.
That's an expression in the Gemara? That's
that's an expression in the Gemara. Obviously, you're going to throw a little bit of a curveball when that's not true. If you want to benefit in a way, and he sees that there's so many people, so he lights a whole candelabra with 40 lights so that it's generating a lot of light, and he walks in with his newspaper and he's reading, or he walks into a waiting room, and he flips on all the lights. And then he sits down with his newspaper, and the only reason he flipped on all the lights is because he sees a bunch of Jews sitting there eating shalosh shudders in the dark. So, I mean, you have to know what happened here. But in a simple case, he lights a ner on the table, the next guy is allowed to come over with his sefer and enjoy the benefit because it wasn't lit for the Jew.
Rabbi, I heard one thing, like if you were sitting in the basement on Shabbos, a non-Jew came in and flipped on the lights because for himself, then you're not allowed to benefit. You'd have to go and leave. You'd have to go.
If he did it for himself, you're allowed to benefit.
You're allowed to. If he did it for you, that's what I meant. If he did it for you, then you're not allowed to benefit. Then, you know, if you...
That's correct.
Okay, yeah.
Except if you have a loophole. A loophole, for example, is that if we were davening in this room with the lights off, but it was daytime, and there was enough light coming in from the windows for us to daven bidochek, it's a little difficult to daven, but you could make out the words and you could daven. And now he flipped on the lights, and now I can read so much easier. That's permitted, because it's not considered a consequential benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It wasn't a game changer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If the room is dark, and he flips on the lights, or he flips on the lights when it was daytime, and now it's nighttime, and we're going to try to continue benefiting something that we couldn't have benefited from before, because... Had the lights been off, it would be pitch black here.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to benefit from, but it's an inconsequential benefit you're allowed.
Okay. Isn't there some type of leniency, though, if it's for a tzibur versus...
Very good.
Right? So then
sometimes you have a different case, right? This is very counterintuitive. I just mentioned to Randy, well, it depends if it's a consequential benefit, meaning consequential benefit is worse. But then it gets so extreme sometimes... That you're dealing, he gives an example, Rabbi Ribiat, of a shul kol nidre night, that it was a hurricane or whatever, and all the electricity is knocked out. They can't even relocate to someone's mansion. It's lights are out, And the question is, they're ready to daven Ma'ariv with words that they're not familiar with, and there's no light. He says, in that case, the Poskim allowed the non-Jew to come in and light candles and place them in strategic places in the shul so that the show must go on.
Mm-hmm. A few years ago, there was, when Rabbi Winter was alive, the air conditioning wasn't on. Uh-huh. And it was Rosh Hashanah, and it was really hot.
Uh-huh.
And so we were able to go get, you know, a non-Jew and have him come.
Good. So there's a little bit of a difference, which we may or may not get to right now.
Like removing a discomfort, you mean? Or like?
Well, yeah, that's sometimes, but that's not the angle to take over there. You have something called shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. If you assume that turning the air conditioning on is rabbinic, mm-hmm. then in an extreme case of need, then you're doing a double drabanon, and that's going to be permitted.
Right.
Shavus to shavus. That's the famous, right? And that makes it mutter.
Right.
So you're going to have the non-Jew, which is rabbinic, doing the air conditioning. That's what I'm asking. I didn't ask him to drive in a car, which is biblical.
Right. I didn't ask him to light a candle.
Which is biblical.
Right.
And therefore, that would be a little bit easier to allow than lighting the candles, which is a straightforward d'oraisa, and it's only because we're in such duress for the tzibur that I have to rely on that approach.
Is that what people hold, and not that to turn a switch is makom patish because you're creating a circuit?
So there is an opinion that holds that flipping the switch is making the product work, and it's makabe patish, and it might be a deoraisa. The common practice is that if you're working through an akum, you're allowed to rely on the lenient approach.
Mm.
That's the easiest way to respond to that question, because you're either way dealing with a rabbinic. Once you're dealing with a rabbinic, you're allowed to follow the more lenient approach, which is to assume that I'm indeed joining a second rabbinic to the first rabbinic.
Right. Thank you.
Good. The Mishnah finishes off that phrase and says, "V'im b'shvil Yisrael osur." But if he did it because of the Yisrael, then it's forbidden. He lit the light, even though it's one light, and everybody's going to benefit. But if he did it for you, then it's forbidden. You have this a regular, simple, contemporary case. You're sitting in a waiting room in the patient's lounge in a hospital, and they see you sitting there in the dark. And they ask you, would you like the light on? Mm. And you really don't want to answer yes, because if they turn it on for you, the best thing that can happen to me is some non-Jew walks into the lounge and turns it on for himself.
Right.
But if the nurse courteously turns it on for me, I'm going to continue sitting there, but I'm not allowed to pick up a magazine I wasn't able to read until now, and now be able to read it.
Right, but if it was light enough that you could have read it.
If I could have read it before, then yes, yes.
Right. You also want to ask her if she's Jewish.
This is another problem. Yes. Yes.
No. What do you mean?
Well, we have this thing that there's an extra bowl of chulin to anybody who is Jewish. Okay. Let's look at Tosfos in the left-hand margin. The third Tosfos, you'll see it's delicately marked. V'im b'shvil Yisrael osur. If he lit the light for the Jew, then it's forbidden to benefit from it. Nira, says Tosfos, De Asur L'chol Yisrael. It's forbidden to every Jew. De Dafka B'chutz L'tchum D'Rabbanon. If something came out of the Tchum, rabbinic distance, Oma b'parak kol ma'arvin. Uve in sudden, Hababashvil Yisrael Zemutil Yisrael Acher, that it's allowed to be used by a different Yisrael. Avobi Isura de Oraisa ki hachalo. But if you, what was done was a biblical prohibition, like lighting a candle, that's going to be prohibited even to other Jews. So in our waiting room case, if it's fluorescence, it's a whole different game because that could very well be rabbinic. But if it's the classic incandescent with a filament, classic bulb, and she flips up on the lamp for you, so not only is it prohibited to me, but Tosfos is saying it's going to be prohibited to the next Jew who comes by, and I'm going to have to tell the next person who walks in, I guess, you should just know this lamp is a treifa lamp. Until Shabbos ends, how does a lamp become treif? Well, it was turned on by a non-Jew for me. Right. And Tosfos says, "Osur b'lechol Yisrael." It's going to be prohibited to everybody. The
rabbi didn't bless it.
The rabbi didn't bless it. Yisrael hamevasha b'Shabbos b'shogeg yochal. Even though we know that there's a halacha, that if a person accidentally did malacha on Shabbos, a good frum Jew accidentally cooked, it's more lenient in terms of allowing somebody else to eat from it. Says Tosfos, a basic yesod, you have to know when to apply this and what indeed would be permitted and how we paskin. But the principle is very simple. Hasam lo chai shinan isharis le le'echol. Dilma osi livshule bemezid. We're not worried that if you allow this food to be eaten, they might come to do it purposely.
That's
the same
with the Rambam.
Because no one's going to go ahead and purposely be mechalal Shabbos.
This kind of ties in with the Rambam, though, isn't it? Like, because he's saying that, you know, if you allow this, like, it'll be, and he's saying this isn't going to be kal here.
And that does absolutely not apply when you're dealing with another Jew.
Right, especially it's b'shogeg, it was like, just, you know.
Great. Yeah. Pause a moment. Fast forward a few hundred years to our time. And I don't believe it's so simple to answer the question in the same way. If your car mechanic, who's Jewish, did malacha on Shabbos for you, b'shegeg, because he doesn't know any better, maybe. Well, that's called shegeg. So are you going to tell me, oh, no problem, no one would ever do malacha on Shabbos b'mezid? I mean, it's absurd to apply it to a non-frum Jew in our time.
Right, but I thought this is going on. So this is going on the person who did it b'shogeg, as opposed to the person who's eating.
Yeah, no, you're fine in understanding Tosfos. Yeah. I'm throwing you an awareness that just like, huh? I mean, how could you apply this?
Right.
But if you have a non-Jew who did it for a Jew, isharis lei, if you allow that. He definitely would come to tell the non-Jew to do it for him, and that's prohibited. Don't compare this to what we learned previously. If a non-Jew comes to extinguish a fire, don't tell him, extinguish, don't extinguish, it's not our business. Over there, we're very worried about not telling him. And over here, it's forbidden even if he simply intended it for you, even if you didn't say anything. Over there, we tell you not to say anything. It'll be okay.
Is his fire or yours?
There's a danger fire, a fire that's destroying property. So we're not going to tell him what to do. But he's doing it for us.
You know, our house is on fire.
Yeah.
And the fireman's coming in.
Yeah. Don't say anything to him. It'll be okay as long as you don't tell him anything.
And the default is he's going to put out the fire.
He's going to put it out.
That's a problem?
Well, apparently over there we're allowing it as long as he's doing it from his own motivation. You don't have to tell him, yeah, no, he'll do it.
Right, because
and over here we're saying, it doesn't matter what you said or didn't say, if he did it for you, it's a problem. He is doing it for you, it seems. That's Tyson's question.
Right.
It looks like he's doing it for you. It's your property.
So if you have a fire in your house and your non-Jewish, you don't do anything, right? And your non-Jewish neighbor sees your house is on fire and they're nice people. They call up the fire department. The fire department comes.
Yeah.
And they hose and they put the fire out.
Right.
That's a problem?
So
according to
the
that
minute,
question?
No. So the minute you're bringing in nowadays, it becomes very, very uncomfortable because we, in our time, have major safety issues. It's a threat to life. This is not a house that's distant from everyone else's house and it'll burn itself to the ground and all that's happening is I'm losing money.
Okay.
I mean, the minute you start asking your next door neighbor, so all the antennas go up, 1 second.
This my house is in trouble.
Your house, right. Their house, their babies, their children, their... you can't let a fire... I mean, eventually we're going to have to call the fire department anyway. We might as well call it while it's small. It's like... I'm okay with my shed burning down on Shabbos for the sake of Shabbos. But it's not about the shed in our time. Because in a heartbeat, it's going
to go to the tree.
Go to the next one. It doesn't, right? So someone made an effort to illustrate this. Picture a bungalow distant from everything. The question is, are you supposed to call or you're not supposed to call type of question. And the answer in our time is you're allowed to call. If you don't have any safety reason and you couldn't conjure up a good reason to call, you're still allowed to call because of the mezuzahs.
But they had mezuzahs.
It's Kisvei Kodesh.
But they had mezuzahs.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Wow. Isn't that how the conservative movement started?
I forgot to do my disclaimer on this, that we're exploring the topic.
It was the first 30 days. It was before they were...
It was the first 30 days.
Right. That's good.
So if you have a Sifrei Torah in your house, that's even more of a...
Yeah. Whatever. But fundamentally,
yeah,
yes.
Right.
Fundamentally, we're not going to call for assistance. Fundamentally...
Right.
But when he comes, we allow him to do it.
Okay.
So Taisvis is asking, but he's doing it for
you. Right.
I don't understand. By us, when he lit the fire for you, even though you didn't say, it was, Al Tavir, don't light it, don't not light it, doesn't bother me, it's forbidden. He lit it for you, you're not allowed to benefit. And over there, we allowed it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because when do we say a principle that he's doing it for himself? That's because he's extinguishing it. Because there's no intrinsic benefit from his action. His action did not produce. If he weaves a garment and I put the garment on, that's a very personal hana'ah. If he cooked my chulent, and now I eat my chulent, that's a personal hana'ah. He put out the fire, Taisvah says. 1 second. He put out the fire. Did he create anything? The thing was there before too.
But it wouldn't have been.
Yeah, but it was. But it's here. He impacted it in a... indirect, in a that's not real benefit. This is a very important, you have to know when to apply it, right? There's a classic case that people ask, I left the light on in the fridge. Can I have a non-Jew open the fridge, shut the light, so that I can keep opening and closing the refrigerator door during Shabbos? Mm-hmm. What kind of benefit is unscrewing the light? How is that going to impact me? I understand. Now I can access my food. It sounds like a hana'ah.
Right.
According to this Taisvis, is that really a hana'ah? Am I benefiting from the fact that the light is off? ah, now it's dark. Now I can go to sleep. I mean, how does it directly impact me?
Right. It's only because of this.
Even halacha, that light off because I can sleep is not even clear that right. It's a real impact.
Right, because it's a halachic issue, not a hana issue. The light. The only reason you're dealing with the light is because halachically you're not turning on and off.
Right.
But there's no
hana. I don't care at all.
Right.
On, off?
Doesn't matter.
If you asked anybody, they would rather have it on. There's no question that anybody who it makes a difference to
right.
wants it on.
Right.
So that they can find
it easier. Right.
Which soda they're right. taking out better.
Right.
There are still people who drink soda?
No.
Okay. Aval hacha, but in our case, turning on the light. Sheguf yisol nena b'maisa shel nachri. You're getting a very personal benefit from the light. I can read now. I can daven now. I can say Tehillim now. Lo amrina adaita d'nafshe ka'ovid. On that you can't just say, well, he did it for himself. He was motivated to do it. Ha'ol v'hanochrim echskarvin lahana also. He's having kavana for your benefit. Kach pirush Rabbeinu Shimshon Hazakein. This is one of the Baalei Tosfos. Again, not to pasken the shaila, but to just like start opening our minds to appreciate how complex the definition of benefit is to really know, am I benefiting? Okay. Page 5.
I guess I'm saying, and if you don't want to get into now, it's fine, but this thing about the mezuzah, and they had mezuzahs, and I mean, that could be like a Yerida Sidoris kind of thing, like we're not at a point where we can handle that halacha, and so they find a way to legitimately...
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a nice question.
Right.
So because if there's a small fire and we have mezuzahs, we're allowed to call 911?
There's no question in our time you're allowed to contact emergency services. Whether it's going to be because of the danger to people of your house evacuating them properly, or it's because the fire could jump to the next person's house. Mm-hmm. There's no question that in your typical case, it is an academic law, meaning we need to know that what's expected of us, l'kavod Shabbos, is even if I lose everything. That's what's expected of us. But on a practical level, generally there's a danger to life that's either direct or expected within, you can't leave it unattended. It doesn't make sense. I'll leave it unattended until, yeah, I mean, how many untils do you want to do? But if you leave it unattended, eventually you're going to end up calling the fire department anyway.
It could be a small fire that you could technically put out. You know.
If there's a way that you could contain it.
Right, because you can't.
If your only violation is going to be, I don't know, like a muktzah type violation, you're able to contain it. A candle flipped to the floor.
Right.
And I find that if I can put a disposable tin pan near it so that it doesn't catch. If you want to start being creative, you have nice questions you could come up with. But bottom line, if there was a fire that was active, that's not considered the correct response to say, well, I don't see the danger yet. We expect you to put on your thinking cap and see the danger. The danger is there. Eventually, the fire department is going to have to be called. You want to wait till it hits three houses over where there's an infant or an invalid? I mean, you want to wait? You want to wait? And that'll be a 5-alarm fire? I mean, if that makes you happy. Either way, that phone call is going to have to be made.
It wouldn't matter if you're the only Jewish house in an old non-Jewish neighborhood.
Yeah, that's not
right?
acceptable.
It doesn't matter, right? You'd still...
It's not acceptable.
Right.
I'm still confused about this because I thought that... On Shabbos, there's a concept that you're not allowed to go and put out the fire even if you lose all your possessions.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, we've just stated that eventually the fire department would have to be called, and then
why would the fire department have to be called eventually?
Because if you're living in a neighborhood, not only your house would catch fire.
I'm not talking about that. It's very simple. Why would the fire department eventually have to be called? because it'll be a danger to life.
A danger to life, but
period.
But there's a danger to life.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Not but, obligated to wait until someone is suffocating under a bed, Rahman al-Itzlan, and then I call. You're not obligated to wait. It's foolish to wait. You're allowed to call now if that's but the normal progression.
I understand that concept, but it seems contradictory to the original concept, which you're not allowed to go and do anything to go and put out the fire, even if it meant losing all your possessions.
I don't understand the contradiction. That's correct. We have to be willing to lose all our possessions, but not life.
Oh, okay.
So even then, 500 years ago, if there was some kind of threat to the life, right, then you could call the volunteers to put out the fire,
There's
right?
a very significant siman what? In Shulchan Aruch about extinguishing a fire on Shabbos. But for the most part, we rely on the few words that say that if there's the danger to life, we're lenient. Because in our situation, that's typically what it is.
Okay.
And that's, you have an isolated bungalow way, even with a wind, nothing would happen to anybody else. You start thinking, so what's the heter? So you have svarim, you have mezuzahs, so, you have to think it through. But in a typical case, that's not what we're talking about at all. Typical case, there's danger to life.
In your case of the candle fell, could you pick it up with a shinui? In a case like that?
When we do Hilchos Shabbos, we'll talk.
Just get you to come back.
Hold
on. You got to stay on track. Okay. Page 5, Masnisin. Nochri Sheba Lechavos. This is what Taisus was referring to. A non-Jew that comes to extinguish the fire. So again, forget about extinguishing the fire and it's a danger to life. Whatever. I mean, he comes to do a malacha. Ein omrim lo kaveh ve'al tekaveh. Don't tell him what to do. She'ein shevisasar aleihem. Because ultimately, you're not responsible for his Shabbos. Because he's not Jewish. And therefore, you can let him put it out. Let's drop down to Tana Rabbanon about midway on the page, towards the end of a line. Tafresh. Maisa, you see it? Maisa v'nafla d'leika b'chatzera she Yosef ben Simoi b'sichin. It was a story with this Yosef, and a fire broke out. Ubo anshe gisterosh al Tzipori, the army, the battalion from Tzipori came, lechabos, to put it out. Mepnei shapetropes shal melech haya, because the king had an interest. Velo hinichon mepnei kavod haShabbos, and he didn't want them because of honor to Shabbos. V'nasa lo nes, and a miracle happened. V'yardu gishamim, and it started pouring. V'chibu, and it put it out. This is how they knew that you could put out fires, with airplanes. I mean, this is the original. From the heavens, you can get the water. Lo erev, that night, shiger kol echad mehem shtei siloim. He sent coins of reward to the people who showed up, to the battalion. V'laf rachos shebohen, and to their leader, Chamishim. He sent a large present. And that's how he handled it. Since they came, you got to pay them. But I don't want them doing the malacha, and I have my own miracles, I have my own ways. Yeah, fine. Uchashashamu chachamim bedavarim, and the chachamim heard the story. Amru, they said, lo haya tzarech lekach. He didn't have to go to such extents. Sharei shaninu, we learned in a Mishnah, nachri sheba lechabos, a non-Jew comes to extinguish. In omrim lo kabei va'al tekabei. We don't tell him what to do. Let him put it out. He's putting it out because he chooses to do so. And we're fine with that. It's, as Tosfos says, an indirect benefit. And they're doing it because they're motivated to do it. And however we handle it, we can give them a reward afterwards. But the wording here is that it's not a problem.
But when he says he didn't have to do this, I mean, he didn't have to rely on
send
the
them away. He didn't rely on the nace. Trust me, if he was relying on the nace wouldn't have come.
Right, okay. All right, okay.
He was Mesiras Nefesh.
Right, right, okay. All right.
So this is not payment for a malach on Shabbos. It's just sort of a tip, a nice.
That's an interesting question. There is an expression in halacha called kol hamechave eino mafsid. Anybody who puts it out will not lose. We'll make it worth your while. It's a good thing to say to a taxi driver when you need him to do things for you. You won't lose out on this one. Jews are generous. We give extra nice tips. You know, you have to know how much you're allowed to say, but you won't lose out.
No, but if the taxi driver has to take someone to the hospital on Shabbos, so I can't pay you today, but you're still going to get paid, but you didn't hire him on Shabbos. But here...
So honestly, just to stop you midway, we're not halachic right now, but I mean, the fact is, unless a comfortable arrangement exists... and the taxi driver is okay with that arrangement, you're allowed to figure out a way to pay them because we need them to cooperate. Yeah. So there are places like we have. You could quote the name of whichever shul that has an arrangement with you and just keep my address and you know we're good for the money and we have an ongoing relationship and you could do that. But if it didn't boil down to that, I'm not looking for people to start, I mean, don't worry, we'll get to you after Shabbos. There are a lot of things that we might be able to use non-Jews, which we don't, because we drive them crazy. You could ask the nursing staff in a hospital to do all your malachas for you, but if it takes them away from what they're supposed to be doing, which is caregiving, then we'd rather do these things with a shinoi if the patient really needs them, rather than nudging the non-Jewish staff. So you have to, it's a big judgment call. But continue anyway.
So him providing the coins to the fire service afterwards.
Yeah.
It's not
he didn't promise it. He didn't say it on Shabbos.
It's not wages.
Right. Okay. Let's take a look at the two Rashis that are marked. The first one is the beginning of the medium lines. Masnisin, right after the Gemara's in Rashi. Einomrim lo kavei. Rabbanan gozer al amira la nachri mishum shavus. The Rabbanan said that amira la nachri is forbidden as a dirabbanan. Velo sechavei. In sarach limchos biyadu. You don't have to object. You leave him and he'll put it out. You're not obligated regarding the resting of the non-Jew if he's not your slave. Right? When it says in Asaras Adibros that not allowed to work for you, it means that you own. But less than that, if it's a friend, if it's a worker, you're not obligated if they're doing it of their own volition. The other Rashi that's on this page is four lines up. Nachri adaita d'nafshei ovid, v'afilu yodeya shenoach lo liyisrael hu, even though he knows that it's beneficial to the Jew, la'anos atzma mechavin, but his intention is for his own benefit, sheyodeya shelo yafsid. He knows that he won't lose. He knows that we give tips in such cases. And that's okay. Okay. I'd like to skip to page 8 so that we could conclude with the fundamentals. This is Kovitz Shiurim, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. And let's go to where Rabbi Reingold marked, which is in the left-hand column, Os Mem Tes, about 8 lines down. Venira, it appears to me, Deba Amira Lenochri Yeshnei Isurin. When it comes to Amira Lanachri, there are two reasons to prohibit.
And it's something specific about Shabbos. So we have the question about whether
let's assume.
Okay.
The Midrabanan yesh shlichus lanachri l'chumra. Midrabanan, there's shlichus to the non-Jew l'chumra. Meaning, we don't rely on it. If you need something reliable, you can't rely on the principle of shlichus by a non-Jew. But l'chumra, if you're asking him to do something wrong and you want to know, does it extend to you? You have to be knowing that it does work l'chumra. V'amalacha she'oseh hanachri, the work that he's doing, nechsheves al Yisrael mitam shlichus. It's attributable to the Jew through shlichus. Omehai taima, therefore, afilu omar l'nachri b'chol she'yaseh l'malacha b'shabbos, even if you told the non-Jew during the week to do the malacha on Shabbos, gam kein also it's going to be prohibited. That's number one. And that's powerful. Shlichus, even if you told him beforehand. Beis, ha'amira atzma asura. The speech is forbidden. Mishum achi, im yitzave l'nachri b'shabbos she'yaseh lo malacha b'chol. If you're telling the non-Jew on Shabbos to do something for you on Sunday, it's also going to be prohibited. Gam kein asur. If you're telling him on Shabbos to do it on Shabbos, yesh b'zeshnei isurim. There are indeed two problems. And we saw this in Rashi originally. One issue is dabar davar, and one issue is problem is shlichus. Okay. I think we'll stop there. The shiur in yeshiva at 11:30 is on. I'm hoping the condition of the